The encounter between Jesus and the leper here in Matthew 8 is paralleled almost word for word in Luke chapter 5 and in Mark chapter 1. And when the three evangelists step aside from their own need to interpret Jesus for their particular communities and present an episode in Jesus' life with one voice, then we know that this is a central event containing such profundity of meaning that our perspectives, our needs, and our situations will automatically echo and bring about an interpretation for us that is graced. So across the three Gospels, we see that Jesus, in reacting to the leper, reacts in exactly the same way. Before he speaks, he touches. And this is something of significant importance, because lepers lived in the realm of death. Because their flesh was rotting, as does the flesh of a corpse, they were seen in the realm of death, both physically and morally. The separation between the physical and the moral, that is a mark of the way that we try to look at things, was not a hallmark of the society of Jesus' time. So we can aptly call the leper disgraced and disgraceful. And Jesus touches out the sick, the disgraced, and the disgraceful. From a deep welling of compassion, from a deep welling of recognition, and of a deep welling that this person's desire is the same as the desire that any human being has for health and wholeness. Jesus recognizes himself in the leper. He recognizes wholeness in the leper. And he reaches out and touches that wholeness and brings it forth, affecting the leper's whole body. Not only his body, but the leper's relationships with people. Because while his flesh was disfigured, he would have to live outside of any town or city. He would have to cover his upper lip and cry out, "Unclean, unclean," if anybody came close to him. He would have had to be disheveled in hair and dress so as to be abhorrent and obnoxious to normal, well-dressed, well-kept, kempt people. And so Jesus reaches out to the unkempt, to the disgraceful, to the ragged, to the oozing, and touches him. His first reaction is to touch, whereas our reaction, our natural reaction, would be to flee in disgust and distress at our own disgust. Jesus touches. And that is an important insight into the divine life of God working through Jesus in the world. He touches the disgraceful to bring the disgraceful to the grace and integrity that we all desire. We see the echo of that coming from the life of Abraham. God makes a covenant promise to Abraham, not only about Isaac, who is yet to be born, but about Ishmael. Ishmael, the disgraceful son of a disgraceful relationship with a disgraced servant. The ugliness of that situation when Sarah tried to fulfill God's will by shoving Hagar, or rather by shoving Abraham into Hagar's tent, is disgraceful. There's no apology for the disgrace there. But God reaches out and touches even Sarah's short-sightedness. He touches even Abraham, having been browbeaten by Sarah, into this situation. Both of them functioning from the highest of motives to fulfill God's will for progeny and taking a path that God had not planned for this. Taking a path of human short-sightedness and human disgrace. They are both to blame, although in the unfolding of the history, the one would blame the other. Sarah would eventually blame Abraham for having slept with Hagar, and Abraham would retort, "But you made me do it." The division, the disgrace around the child is very present. But here God speaks words of grace into that disgraced situation, promising to Ishmael and his descendants a history, a life filled with grace. So even there, with God's mysterious title of El Shaddai, translated variously as Almighty, as the Mountain God, as God who watches over the entrances of Israel, all these various interpretations throughout Jewish and Christian history have been applied to this title El Shaddai. But here we see El Shaddai as the one who brings about grace in disgraceful situations. And these texts should help us meditate on what lies ahead for our church in this year, especially for the Synod of Families in October. We too easily react with disgust to the disgraceful. And there are many disgraceful situations in broken families, in families that suffer internal violence, in families that suffer internal abuse, and in all the horrors that we would wish to avoid as believers. But we must find a way of touching and healing the horror, of not excluding people who live in horrible situations, but finding ways of healing them to be joined to the community. To do what Jesus did, to touch and participate with grace in the disgraced, before even speaking a word, and then only speaking about willing to change our lives and the lives of those we are graced to touch, from disgrace to grace. Jesus willed to change disgrace to grace. That must be the will of the church, so deeply embedded that we do it before we speak a word. And that is the challenge that lies ahead, not only for the church universal, in looking at the disgraced situations that do exist, encouraging the graced situations that also exist as shining examples of family life. But can we learn to touch with grace before we say a word? Can we touch with grace before we say a word? Amen.